Well, hello everyone. Welcome to our moment, our show that you've been waiting for. It's a once a month deal with the one and the only Dr. Haim with us, all the way from the land down under, somewhere else. I think he's somewhere down there. He'll tell us more.
Yeah, we're kind of traveling about at the moment, Hurricane. So we're somewhere in central Queensland, getting around to see how things are done in other places. And I learn a lot through that. And through that, we're able to share our experiences and get through this life together.
Well, you do get to travel quite a bit, so that's a good thing. And I think travel is a beautiful thing for people to decompress. But in your case, you're helping others, you're learning, so it's all good. I mean, it's the full package.
Yep, pretty much is.
All right. Well, again, folks, for those of you who are tuning in right now, this is your monthly live Q&A with Dr. Haim. So we have questions. If you do want to come on the show, you do have the link to the stream. Just have to raise your hand and we'll bring on. You can ask questions directly and interact live. If not, you can call the number that is on the ticker and or basically you just can watch and comment. We are on Instagram. We are also on YouTube. So either one of those, you can check, you know, and comment, interact, and put your, questions. Don't be shy. I know this is about mental health and it's always taboo. And, you know, we constantly state in this, you know, it's a best time to ask questions. It don't have to be about you. It can be about, you know, things that are just general or things that you've experienced or somebody else experienced. You know, you can be anonymous. You can be whoever you want to be. Right, Doc? I mean, it's that simple.
That's why we do it. Yeah.
All right. So while we wait for interactions, we do have a bunch of questions. So let me bring them up and let's start with the number one on the list here. All right. So this is a pretty intense one. I think we've covered this before, but it's a question that came through. So we'll talk about it. I want to put it up on screen. Okay. What is the root cause behind the suicidal ideation, Torrey, West Virginia? So, suicide.
Okay. So, Torrey, thank you for that question. I'm actually going to take your question exactly the way that it's written. So, the cause behind suicide ideation, rather than suicide itself, because there's a big difference, Hurricane, and it makes a big difference. And we're learning about this all the time. And it's like you said in the introduction, there's a lot of things about mental health that is taboo. It's like it's a taboo subject. There are things that we're not allowed to talk about. So here, mate, we're going to talk about them. So Torrey asked about suicide ideation, which is the thought that you may want to do away with yourself. That's what suicide ideation is. And it's a long way from suicide ideation to actually completing suicide. It's a long way. However, because all of this happens in an internal mind in a person, it's a pathway that we're not privileged to. But Torrey, this is what I've got to do to directly answer your question. Suicide ideation happens in almost all of us. So the root cause of suicide ideation, in other words, having thinking the thought that you might do away with yourself, has its root cause in just being alive. Just being alive opens up the possibility of negating that. And I know that sounds a bit strange, and we haven't learned all about this, but what I suggest is that just because you are alive, the thought will come to you, what if I wasn't alive? And then it's a control issue. Can I actually control that? Can I actually do something to keep my life going? And the answer is basically no, but we can all do something to end our lives. So this idea of being in control of your life becomes precious to us. And Torrey, what I'd like to suggest is that we consider to value our lives simply because if we or anything ended it, it'd all be over. And that then leads me into the area of gratitude. Because life, all right, Hurricane, I've got to say for some people, life is a sexually transmitted terminal illness, right? But for other people, it is something to be grateful for because we didn't create ourselves. We don't understand how life actually evolved or began, but we experience it. And even in the suffering, there's this idea of, man, it's just amazing to be alive. And even if we're suffering or we go through difficult periods, there's the hope of having better times. And that actually is a thing that we can use to make sure that that suicide ideation doesn't get a hold of us. So, Tori, the root cause of suicide ideation is the gift of being alive. And the way to keep it under control, if you'd like, is to acknowledge that life is a gift. We have some control over it, but it's better to keep striving towards life than not, because science knows that all of life does strive to have more life. So, Hurricane, I hope that gives you some sort of a way in to start to look at Tori's
question. Oh, yes. There's a lot of there. Well, first of all, I mean, it is a, I mean, I love what you said. Life is beautiful and it strives for more life. I mean, technically, everything around us, you know, if you give it a chance, it just keeps growing. I mean, look at the plants, yeah. Right? You don't need the humans. They're just, you'll find more plants in no time. And actually, there have been studies that if mankind will disappear, that life will still continue on Earth, you know, as it is, and plants will just take over everything, right? But that's just, you know, the general term of, you know, life. But it is precious, and you know, you talked about being grateful and gratitude, right? I mean, that is a great thing. We are supposed to be, you know, appreciative to what we have. Now, I think the question is well, at least what I think I know personally, based on the different shows and discussions I've had, is that, you know, there's circumstances that drive people to start thinking about ending the life or not, you know, doing without it, because it's an end. Like, you know, this is what I have to deal with. So basically, it's an escape route, right? You know, and I think that's really the challenge. You know, there's certain things that happen to us in this life. Everybody's going through turmoil at a point or another, and you know, we get stressed out. And so, based on your education to me over the last few 4 years, there's a lot of chemical stuff that happens in our brain. And therefore we have these outcomes, you know, that or basic outlooks that we have, and sometimes they could tend to be, you know, not in the best shape.
Yeah. So why do things get so bad that we want to do away with ourselves? So this has to do with the science of thoughts, and the bottom line is we do not know the origin of thoughts, but I want people to know that there is a difference between thoughts and thinking. And this is an experience that we can all have. We can get annoyed at some of the thoughts that come to us, including really negative thoughts like wanting to do away with yourself. But what's more important is your thinking. Your thinking is, how long do you want to entertain that thought? Can you focus on another thought? And is there a way that you can actually move through a thought? So although we can't control thoughts, we have more control over our thinking. So I get people to do a little experiment. So if you focus on the back of your hand and you look at the back of your hand and you look at the veins, you look at the skin, you look at some of the hair there, and you look at some of the tendons that come through, for that time that you're looking at it, Hurricane, you're thinking about the back of your hand. And just by having that idea to focus your thoughts somewhere, you are changing the thoughts in your mind. And so although you may have bad thoughts coming to you, you can decide whether you focus on that or try to focus your thoughts somewhere else. And so a lot of the work that we do as psychiatrists is to try to work with people's thoughts to give them that feeling of control over your thoughts. Because in the end, Hurricane, a thought is just a thought. It's whether you act on the thought, and that is more under your control. So when we're working with people who have suicide ideation, you ask, how strong are those thoughts? Do you feel in control of your behavior? And quite literally, when I have people who are highly suicidal and they don't know what to do with it, often I will say to them, just sit in a chair. And do not get out of the chair until the thoughts and the feelings that get associated with those thoughts move away like a wave. So it becomes like a wave moving through you. And as long as you don't get out of that chair and do anything, you will be safe. And when that wave passes and you find that you've got less thoughts and less feelings that would result in a bad outcome if you did something, then you go back to your thinking rather than your thoughts. And the thinking is, what am I going to do next? And that becomes protective when people go through suicide ideation.
Well, thank you. I mean,
it's not the whole answer. Okay. There's a lot more, but yeah.
Well, doctor, I mean, I think you just given people a tool to use in case they have something in their mind that crosses in this particular world of, you know, bad thoughts about especially ending life. You know, you just given a tool where someone can literally just sit down and also differentiate it between what is a thought and what is thinking. And the thinking process is ongoing. The thought is one isolated item that you can really remove or kind of just you know, abolish if you want, you know, by not entertaining it. Doc, can you hear me? Technology is failing today. Huh?
Yes. Yes. So this is the difference between thoughts and thinking. But I can barely hear you. I don't know what's wrong with the connection today. I'm really sorry about that hurricane.
It's okay.
But we'll do the best that we can. We got to do the best that we can. So another technique is to know that a thought is just a thought. There is no reason that you have to act on a thought. In fact, if you even just say to yourself, right now, I'm having the thought that, and then you fill in the blanks. And what that does is start to put you in control because you create distance between yourself and the thought. And a thought is just a thought. So you then go, okay, I'm having this thought. And you yourself are in control of your actions. We cannot control our action. We cannot control our thoughts and our feelings, but we can have more control over our behaviors and our words. And it's in that space that we need to work, because a thought has no consequences, but an action has huge consequences. What we do to ourselves, what we do to other people, that's when you want to go to thinking and choosing rather than following something just because it's a thought. So creating different distance between yourself and a thought becomes very important in all of this as well.
Well, thank you, doctor. Well, again, I love what you said, is that the thought is that that's just that. And then as long as you don't take action or act on it, you know, basically it's irrelevant, right? But it takes a thinking process to get someone to realize that, you know, I can do better. And, you know, because the thought comes, but wouldn't there be a thinking process that gets you that thought in the first place? That sounds
okay. Okay. So, this is actually different. So probably the best way to think about thoughts is that they're totally random, going in and out of your head all the time. Now, unfortunately, as I say that, I know that's not quite true, because it is you will have certain thoughts, but the key thing is you do not choose the thoughts. It's like your dreams. You do not choose what comes into your dreams. You have no control over that whatsoever. But when I say thinking, this is where you have a lot more choice. If you get a thought, the thinking process is, do I want to spend time with this, or could I divert myself so I get other thoughts come in? Also, if we have hundreds, even thousands of thoughts that go through our mind every minute, the question becomes, which ones are we going to concentrate on? Now, this is difficult to do, unfortunately, but you get more choice to choose where you're going to put your effort and energy rather than feel that you are a slave to thought, which none of us actually are. A thought is just a thought.
Well, you know, doctor, I believe in it, and I actually tend to agree to your point, is that it's just a thought, like any other thought. We have thousands of them that cross our minds any given minute. And, you know, we are the ones who electing, you know, which ones to behave with and act on and take the next steps, right? So it's just a matter of like having the the logic maybe, or having the I guess the ability to differentiate a good thought versus a bad thought. Now that's I think where it's more difficult for someone to realize, like, well, is this good, is this bad? How do we kind of convey that to someone?
Okay, so conveying what is good or bad, that comes down to a values judgment that we all make. And the way the science is moving, Hurricane, is we are starting to understand that a sense of good and bad, so a sense of morality, is innate. And I'm gonna let you know why it's innate, because all of science understands that anything that's alive wants to be alive and it wants to survive. So in other words, being alive is good and not being alive is not good. And out of that already becomes a sense of morality, which means that we can make choices that will lead towards life, not only our own life, but everybody's life, or we can make choices that negate life, that move away from life. And through that, so even scientifically, you can start to build a morality. Now, a thought like, I am having suicide ideation, becomes such an obsessive thought for so many people because you actually can choose that, right? So the next thing to do is to associate it with another thought like, I could turn into a horse today, right? So, and if you get people to say, I could kill myself or I could turn into a horse, okay? Now, one sounds absolutely absurd, but it's just a thought. And we don't usually obsess with a thought like that. We dismiss it straight away because we think it's ridiculous. Yeah. So now we get into something that actually answers more of the question as to why we get suicidal thoughts. Because suicidal thoughts make us feel powerful. I'm actually in control of my life, right? And so when you realize that, now you make a choice as to whether you can use your power for good, in other words, for life, or for evil. Death. Okay. And so if all of life, and I'm including bees and moths and plants, they actually do all that they can to stay alive. Okay. So if we're part of that process, which we are, we too somehow can make the choice to be part of the process of life. So now the question becomes, if I'm getting suicide ideation, how can I become more part of the process of life? So life, let me get on with it. So things that make you feel grateful, happy, alive, and powerful and part of the whole human race, that's what we've got to move towards, because that's what will lead towards life. And then we're part of the flow of all of life's purpose. That's just where we're heading towards as far as science is concerned.
Well, thank you, Doctor. But there's a few things that are happening, right, in today's world. I believe that the rate of suicide is higher than past years and, you know, even past centuries. Maybe you can correct me if that is a fact or not.
No, you are totally right. Good insight, yes.
Thank you. But here's the thing, though. You know, there's also a lot of influence today, right? And it depends on, you know,
yes,
I think drugs, people around you, a lot of stuff can empower someone even to go there because, oh, you're all the great, you got all this, you know, let's test it out, you know, and people sometimes they can feel that. That's one way to look at it. The other one is they're just people are just, they have enough. And you said they have the power, you know, over themselves. Well, at least we think we have the power. Yes. Right? And, you know, it is a, not a real thing, because I mean, you did not create yourself as a human. We didn't do that, right? We're here, as you said. there's a different process to get us here, but you know, can we take our life? Now, there's also, we can go into philosophy, we can go to religion. There's the beyond. Do we really die? Do we not die? I mean, there's all that. The physical body may die, and if we believe in the soul, there's all that. Yeah. So then we have the debate about religion. Yeah. You know, hell, heaven, all these things. So it becomes now, Doc. Another, just want to add one more thing. Is there a potential prospect that someone who has a little bit more faith, you know, not to even entertain a suicidal ideation versus someone who may not have any faith?
Yes. Yes. Okay. So here we can go to studies. And thank you for doing that, Hurricane, because what you've done is you've moved the debate from thoughts to something very practical. So suicide rates throughout the whole world and different things that are protective. So just on that last point, yes, we have studies that show that the more spiritual and more religious a person is, the more protected they are from suicide ideation. But here's what's interesting in those studies. Those studies from 20 years ago showed that the effect was a lot stronger than it is today. So we're starting to lose the protective effect of different religious systems and spirituality. All right. Now, just before we leave thoughts, I want to let people know that I have a podcast on how to work with your thoughts, how to get rid of useless thoughts. And that goes through all the scientific techniques that have to do with psychotherapy, things that we can do, things that we can look at, things that we can analyze to move your thoughts in a more positive direction. But let's look at society today and where it is and why it may be that suicide is on the rise. Firstly, one very strange thing is globally, suicide rates are actually falling, except for some very important exceptions. And they tend to be English-speaking developed nations. So in the USA, suicide rates are rising horribly. In Australia, suicide rates are rising horribly, which means that we are out of kilter with the rest of the world. Now, there are some advantages in that from a scientific point of view. We don't want people killing themselves, but it means that it shows that there is something that those societies are doing that is leading into the suicide rates, okay? So there are a few things that we can look at. Number one is substance abuse. Methamphetamine, drugs, opioids, they definitely move into increasing the suicide rate. The other thing is, now, I hate to say it, you know, it's a bugbear of mine, Hurricane, but social media addiction. We all need to find a way to keep on top of that. And I know that's ironic, Hurricane, because we're on social media right now, okay? But social media, like anything else, can be used for good or it can be used for evil. And all those things that you brought up, the ideas of heaven and hell, different religious systems, life and death, these things get talked about on social media a lot and very quickly. And that unfortunately leaves a lot of people with a void when it comes to, well, what do I believe? How do I fit in all of that? And without social media, we all were perhaps a little bit ignorant, but we were more sown into the garden of our communities to know where we belonged. Now, where there's a disconnect, we're out of the garden of our communities, and a lot of people do not know where they belong. And they turn to social media, where there is a confusing array of ideas, and some of them are very good ideas. I don't want to put down the ideas, but because of the debates that we have, does God exist? Does God not exist? Is there an afterlife? Is there not? It makes people feel uncertain and insecure. So what I encourage people to do is get back into the garden of community, your family, your love relationships, your children, your parents, and the community itself. And that's a very difficult thing to do because it takes more effort than turning on a iPhone that has social media right in front of it.
So in other words, Doc, we need to become more social.
Hurricane, this is something that I come back to time and time again. And the difficulty is that the whole idea is so large that it's very difficult to pin down the science. But the trend shows, and we have had studies since the 1990s, showing that the more social disconnect we have, the worse our mental health. And so there's a seminal study from the 1990s that showed that children in America at home were more unwell than children in the 50s that went to see a psychiatrist. And the reason for that was social disconnect, the breakdown of the family and our community. And that's very sad to say, but hopefully we can be out of that period and we can value family and community once again.
Well, thank you, Doug. And you know, I when I stated that, I mean, I just really mean people have the impression that they're sociable and social through the social media platforms rather than being, yes, as you said, in a community, in a physical setting with the ones that really love them. I mean, you know, here's the thing. I meet someone online. I mean, I have no connection with them other than the comments and words and things that we have there. However, someone that is close to me, family members, brother, sister, cousins, whoever, neighbors, it's a little bit more of a, and by the way, I think in previous shows you've covered this where, you know, the physical contact makes it a lot better for our, you know, chemicals and all the stuff, and there our connection can be, and behavior becomes different. So, I mean, and you stated, I mean, the studies are clear from the past and today. And, you know, the sad thing is, I love what you said. We hopefully go back to this, but with AI and with the meta worlds and the virtual stuff, that thing is just going to get, I don't want to be the messenger of doom here, but if we continue in that path, I mean, I think we're losing a lot more of, you know, track in this. And the one thing that you just stated, Doc, which is interesting, that more of the English speaking countries, why? Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing I can't figure out. I mean, yeah. I mean, we have a lot of languages around the world. Yeah. So why is it that, is it the language or is it just the society itself?
Okay, so it's not the language, but it's a dominant culture. And the dominant culture is the English-speaking developed world. And so people feel they've got to be part of that culture, right? But see, the nice thing is that people that have, let's say, English as their second language, it means that their first language is part of a group of people or a community that they feel embedded in. And that is actually very protective. So I've got a good news story on this very subject. So I'm in central Queensland in a regional center where the First Nations people, the indigenous population, have brought the suicide rate of people in their community down from 15 a year in this region down to zero. Now that is huge. That is just wonderful, wonderful news. And that was done within 5 years. How did they do it? They did it through hearing and seeing. So in other words, they would look out for each other and they would listen to each other's stories. And the bottom line, Hurricane, is they were working on becoming a community again. This took no resources except people talking to each other, hearing each other's stories, and seeing what each other was doing. So that gives me a lot of hope because it shows where I believe the science is heading, that if we can become more of a community again, then we can actually bring down this idea that suicide is part of our society.
You know, Doc, as I'm listening to you, I think we have a lot of holidays in the world. And we come up with holidays all the time. Maybe we should have a day without any social media, without any, you know, stuff where, you know, they had one with no cars, for example, in some parts of the world where you just ride a bike or walk. Yes. Maybe one day without anything, you just meet with people with no technology and see what that looks like. I don't know.
Yes. No, that's exactly right, Hurricane, because I'm going to give you the flip side of that, because I was talking to a prominent member of the community here who said, look, the thing is that 30 years ago, if we had had a fair and we had, you know, all the entertainment and the food and the shows and things like that, a family fair, everybody would turn up. The whole town would turn up. Now, if we put on a fair, we wouldn't get enough volunteers to man all the stalls so that people could have fun. And that's the difference of social media. Because if you put on a fair, it takes a lot of effort, all right? It takes a bit of work, takes a bit of preparation. It takes you giving up your time and your energy. And it really is easier to look at the next on your series from wherever you get your movies or anything, or to look at the next, you know, sort of happy cat video, or to see what your friends are doing on social media. That is so easy to do. And the idea that you just had there, that there are places in the world where you shut down the social media and you have a bike day or a walking day or something where people just get out and talk again, that's what we got to get back to.
I'm all for it. Yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, but it takes effort and people to organize all of that, you see.
I know. Well, listen, maybe, folks, if you're watching and listening, you want to be part of this, maybe start a movement about it and, you know, let's, you know, create maybe a pilot program. I don't know. And if a town, a small, it doesn't matter, somewhere where, you know, one day just no technology and, you know, I mean, a day is going to go by, folks. I mean, think about it. Just if you're sleeping, you're not doing anything. So let's assume that we are sleeping, but we're just doing activity during the day. And that could make a difference. Now, someone can say, well, Hurricane, your ideology is kind of, but listen, we got to keep the positive. We got to keep the hope, you know, fullness that, you know, things can get better. And as you said, it takes effort. We got to start somewhere. So why not here, you know, and just claiming this.
Yeah.
So quickly, Doc, just because I know we've spent a lot of time on this question, but it's an important one and it's big. Just a reminder to folks watching and listening. I mean, in the States, we have 988. We have other hotlines. You know, if you have thoughts, you know, seek help. I would just recommend that. I mean, is that the right thing to do, Doc?
When it comes down to people who have suicide ideation, please seek help. The help is actually very good, and it does make a difference. Got to reach out to someone, and this is also why I said that we all have these thoughts, because it's not taboo. It's something that we all go through, and we're either going to make it through this life together, or none of us are going to make it. So I think it's actually better if we go through life together. And I wanted to talk to some of your entrepreneurs out there, Hurricane, because there are business ideas like opening cafes where you actually get together and play board games or card games, and mobile phones have to be left at the door if you want to get into this exclusive cafe where they serve the best coffee, all right? Things like that.
I like it.
Oh, yeah, it's a great idea. And give those ideas to people who want to make money out of it, because this is what we need in our society. We have to connect as people, and we actually want to connect as people.
Well, thank you, Doc. And, you know, hopefully we'll do more of that, you know, and thank you for the insights as always, you know, great stuff. And I know we've taken quite a bit of the show today, but again, it's a big topic. So I'm going to move on to the next question. I'll put it up here. It's two parts. I mean, just because it's a long question, but here you go. So I find myself trying to live beyond my means and always buy expensive stuff, bags, shoes, etc. And I'm always in debt. I just want to look good. I'm trying to pretend that I can afford those things, and I can't understand why I'm behaving this way. Sarah. I think that's a problem for a lot of us.
It is. It's a problem for all of us. So we can call it retail therapy, but it actually isn't retail therapy. It is retail addiction. And Sarah, the reason that you're behaving this way is because you have a brain, and your brain wants you as a person to be accepted by the people around you. And part of a internet and screen society, which we have at the moment, is that appearances become more and more important. And this saddens me. It really saddens me, because if we're going to trust each other as people, we have to know each other beyond what we see in our faces, in our figures, or the clothes that we actually wear. But unfortunately, I had to dress up to be on screen today. Hurricane, I know you always look good, but I think you had to choose the right t-shirt for this show today. And just the medium of screen technology and social media puts an emphasis on appearances that we didn't have in society before. And there are not many studies on this, I believe, or at least I don't know the studies on this, but if we could get past appearances, but we're not getting past appearances. So let's get back to Sarah's question, all right? Why do I behave this way? Why do I buy things like shoes and bags and clothing that I can't afford? The bottom line is because you want to be part of the human herd. You want to be accepted by all people. And in the brain, when the anterior cingulate gyrus, again, one of my favorite parts of the brain, feels that it is accepted by the people around us, then you get this beautiful release of endorphins and you feel that you are part of the human race and you feel good. So let me talk about a few feel-good experiences, right? And our feel-good experiences actually don't just come in drugs and injectables, all right? They come in together with people experiences. So the experiences that release endorphins in our brain include laughing. So when you go to a comedy club or when you're just together with friends, please laugh, right? And unfortunately, our society is doing things to shut down laughter, and that is actually very bad for our mental health. The second thing is crying. When people get together and go to a funeral and engage in collective grief over something sad that has happened, you actually feel connected to the people around you. So the way that we process our grief and our tears is a community experience. Number three is music. If you can get together with a group of people to sing in a choir or to do some drumming together or even just listening to music together, you will release endorphins in your brain. One of the most amazing places on earth is being in a mosh pit at a rock concert. And there's somebody performing some wonderful music. There are all these people bobbing up and down and doing things that they would not do as individuals. And in that moment, you feel like you are in an enhanced experience, part of human nature. Just don't enhance it with drugs, okay? Because you actually start to ruin the good experience there. And the other thing is, just hugs and smiles and eye contact makes you feel part of the human race. And when you have people that you can hug and smile at and speak to, then you know what? All of a sudden, the handbags and the shoes and the clothes, yeah, they're not that important. Or you can laugh at ourselves when we do that, because sometimes a handbag gets in the way of a really good hug.
Well, so doctor, I mean, this is a global problem. I mean, it's more than ever, as you said. I mean, you talked about social media before. We see a lot of the stuff. There's influencers. My wife and I, we get a lot of solicitations for these things, like, you know, to produce products and show them and so on and so forth. So it is real.
Yes.
Now, obviously, there's money to be made that way. There's marketing. I think there's millions, if not billions, spent on pushing these, I guess, trends and so on and so forth for people. So people feel like obligated. And then you have people who they look down at you if you're not really, kind of spiffed up, dressed up, wearing the right stuff, you know, because it looks like you're not up hip to things. You're maybe behind schedule, or you're poor. That's the other thing. People feel like, I don't want to be labeled as poor or not having, you know, any means, even though you might be able to. For sometimes you go and we spend more than we have. And listen, I've been there. I know people have been there. And, you know, it is a fact of life. I mean, we have a system where credit is available, so you can just spend more. And, you know, it's almost a trap. And it, as you said, there's a high to it. You want to look good and you want to feel good and pretend something. Potentially, as far as I know, the real rich, I mean, the ones that have all the money, they, you know, maybe on the movies, maybe in some of these shows, they do have the glamour stuff. But in general, if you see them in the street, they don't have brand logos and stuff like that. A lot of this, and there are a lot of discussions about this on social media and off social media. So it is an interesting fact that we are living in a society where this is almost necessity now, yet it is not. Yes. Can you hear me, Doc?
Yes. So here I'm going to tie in the influence of social media, and I'm going to take us to, let's say, a very poor country in Eastern Europe. And let's say you've got social media and you like spending time on social media because you like looking at all these people who are well-dressed and all the latest things. But who influences you? Often it's a mother who says you've got to go to church on Sunday, or you've got to keep up with your cousins, or you've got to keep your chores done. And that becomes a big influence. And so your actual community is people who are around you. And the idea of social media is more of a make-believe world. Now, let's go to the middle of, let's say, New York City, where there's less of the influence of people telling you to go to church or keep together with your family. And all of a sudden, what happens on social media becomes more important to you. And so you do actually want to look good. In fact, to make it in business in New York City, you've got to look good. You've got to have some of the right attitudes. And all of a sudden, a world that is a virtual make-believe world becomes more real because you don't have the influence of your cousins, community, church, or whatever it is that was that influence for the person in the poor country in Eastern Europe. And also, when you don't have money to buy all these things, it's not a choice. You just can't do it. You got to make do with what you have. But when you do have money, and the thing is that economically we have done astoundingly well, Hurricane. Yes, there are some very rich people out there, but quite frankly, the whole world has been doing better economically, and we have been lifting people out of poverty at an enormous rate. In fact, I just forget the figures, but I believe that we have gone from 40% of people in poverty to 25% of people in poverty over a couple of decades. We could look at the studies at that because it's really quite phenomenal. But we still are envious of the people in the top 1%, those people that we see with the clothes and the cars. And this is the real tragedy of social media, okay? Because social media can be used to manipulate our minds so that there is more money flowing to people who own these big businesses. Why do we need to buy a bag for $600 when you can actually buy a bag for $60? I don't know.
It's well, that hold on. Sorry, that bags for $250,000. So I don't want to tell you.
Okay. I'm a bit out of date here in Outback Australia.
$600 is quite a, you know, an achievement, but I mean, some people are literally going, you know, for designer bags and things. It's as ridiculous as it sounds, you know, like they, after COVID, they doubled up their prices. And yeah. You know, people jockey for those things. They want them. You know, there are brands you have to make an appointment to purchase these things, you know?
Yeah.
So it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, how that's so, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, not at all. That's a very important Hurricane. Thank you for that, because it comes down to values. Okay. And one of the questions, so I have a series of questions that people can ask themselves to find out their values. But one of the most powerful ones is, what is going to become important to you when you are on your deathbed, or you know that you've only got a week to live? A $250,000 handbag is not going to be very important to you. How you got on with your mother, your partner, your child, or a dispute that hasn't been resolved, those things are going to become more important. So at the moment, when we live under the illusion that we're going to live forever, then we can indulge in $250,000 bags, all right? I can't indulge in a $250,000 bag. I don't know who can. But anyway, but it's actually these things that have to do with people that actually are more value for all of us. But social media takes us away from that for various manipulative purposes, unfortunately.
Well, it is amazing. And you know, I think there's one situation is that some people have plenty of money, right? And so
yes,
these luxuries are made for that kind of, you know, I guess, pool of dollars or currency, whatever it is. Because technically, if you're a billionaire, I mean,
yes,
you just have enough money to spend. So it's different,
yes.
But if you're on a limited budget.
Sorry, you're coming in. That's right. Okay, so what's really important to look at is the exact correlation between money and happiness. Because if we're here for happiness, we may as well know. And this is what the evidence shows. For a household of people, let's say a family living together, as long as there is enough money for decent food on the table, for people to have enough ordinary clothes, and there's enough money left over for one modest holiday per year, that's the maximum happiness that you will get out of your money. Now, many of us are living beyond that, but it doesn't add to our happiness. So the things that do add to our happiness. This is what the wisdom of the sages say, and the science is beginning to show, is meaning, purpose, and serving other people. It was Albert Schweitzer who said the only people who will know to become really happy are the ones who have learned to serve other people. And one of the biggest kicks you can have in life is being helpful to somebody else. And so if you can use your money or your aspiration, not for yourself, but for other people, that will actually add to your happiness bank account if it doesn't add to your financial bank account.
Ooh. Well, doctor, I mean, I think you, this is exactly what it is. We're supposed to have a life of purpose. And you said it. I mean, no one's going to remember all those, the wealth, you know, at the time of death. I mean, as a matter of fact, I've had these discussions before where, you know, people who have been, you know, in the medical field, for example, at the hospital or ICUs, the regrets that people are talking about while they're in those beds is not so much about the money. It's also much about the things and the moments they missed about being with their loved ones and so on and so forth, because you could be caught up in this, you know, literally tornado, hurricane of crazy stuff in life, and you forget about the real things, right? You know, I mean, no pun intended there, but really it's a fact of life, right? I mean, you know, we need to take care of our loved ones, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, yes, we do. But you see, unfortunately, social media knows how to get into our brains and what actually brings us instant pleasure. Whereas to think of our loved ones actually takes some effort. And unfortunately, we are de-skilling socially so that we actually get on with our loved ones less, because our brain is essentially lazy. It will go for the instant pleasure rather than the long-term contentment. So I have this little equation where when I ask people to be the best them that they can be, when you look at the word happiness, go straight to long-term contentment rather than pleasure. Because when you equate the word happiness with pleasure, that's when you get into the drugs, the alcohol, and the shopping bags, right? But when you equate happiness with long-term contentment, that's when you go, people, my loved ones, climbing mountains, making a difference in life. That long-term contentment is the real happiness. Don't aim lower than long-term contentment, because pleasure will not do it for you tomorrow and in the weeks to come.
Well, thank you, Doc. Now, I have a question. So is shopaholic the actual diagnosis, or is just the terminology?
That shopaholic, we've created?
Is that the actual?
Okay, so so the last iteration of our psychiatric Bible, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, acknowledges addictions, and addictions that are not substances. So you can be addicted because of a substance like heroin or methamphetamine, but you can also be addicted to things that are not substances. Shopping, gambling, pornography, social media. We can all be addicted to those things. But I encourage people to get addicted to things like playing a musical instrument, playing a sport, getting out there and enjoying time with people. I have never had to treat somebody for their addiction to tennis or their addiction to serving other people. Choose your addictions wisely.
Well, I think we got to start there. You know, maybe we get to see you more, you know, while having an addiction of sports of sort. But I mean, you know, that would be a nice, I guess that would be a good practice, right? You know, if we can resolve to that as opposed to the other, right? But, listen, it is a mental health show today, and, you know, and we're having some fun with the discussion. But really, at the end of the day, I love what you said, doctor, and, you know, I love you and the work you do and your wife, and with all the shows and all the podcasts that you have, you know, the stuff that you share with the world is just awesome. And it changes, you know, the dynamics for all of us by listening to these discussions, because at the end of the day, you give us the tools and the guidance and instructions of really how to live a better life, and or maybe guide some other people around us to do the same.
Okay, so I've got to share a story of somebody that I was talking to just yesterday, Hurricane, and this is a guy who is addicted to methamphetamine and alcohol. And I said, is there anything else that you like doing in your life? He said, yes, there's plenty of stuff that I like doing in my life. I particularly like hiking and climbing mountains. He said, but for me to get up in the morning and climb a mountain takes a lot of effort. And, you know, it's a lot easier for me to just open another bottle of vodka than to go and climb a mountain. And that's the dilemma that all of us have. And we are working with that young guy at the moment so that he can make the decision to go and climb a mountain. Because I got to tell you, I was quite impressed with some of the mountains that he's climbed. Okay, he's somebody who's been up some of the big ones in Australia, all right? But he still has to make that choice. And if we can help him make that choice to climb a mountain rather than open a bottle of vodka, his life is going to be better. And the people around him and the people that he loves, their lives are going to be better as well. But it takes that extra effort, and that's where we need to work.
Well, so it sounds, I mean, again, doctor, as you've covered this many times, I mean, the core to addiction is the ease of access, you know. Yes. And when you have access to these things, you know, readily, and you know, it becomes just a habit. Like, you know, it's very simple. I can just press a button and get this. You know, I mean, the best one right now that we can all agree to is social media. Everybody's got a phone. I mean, I got three in front of me, so I know how it works. I mean, you just get to carry them like you have two of them, and you can be, you know, scrolling for hours. I see it all the time. People literally, yes, they don't even talk to you. They literally, yes, right, you're driving, people cross the street, they don't even look. I mean, it's, yeah, it's getting, and that's that the lowest, maybe it's not the lowest anymore, because I think there's probably some statistics of deaths and problems that are happening through this, the social media. So it's real. But I love what you said, that, you know, we can change from one thing to the other, but we have to, yes, help each other.
Yes, we have to help each other. And I'm going to finish off with a technique that'll kind of tie in a whole lot of things, and that is just sitting in a chair and contemplating your own thoughts. Okay, some people call this meditation, but other people get put off by this word meditation. But if you just sit in your chair and have what I call a quiet time, and just observe the thoughts going through your mind. And if you crave going into social media, or if you crave buying a shopping bag, or if you crave some vodka, just observe that craving. Just sit in your chair, don't do anything, but just say, this is what I'm craving at the moment. Or if you've got these weird thoughts going through your mind, just sit there and observe the thoughts going through your mind. Because if you can do nothing, if you can just be a human being rather than a human doing, so in other words, don't do anything, just be there, you will observe and you go, aha, this is what's going through my mind. And then you'll enter this area of choice. Do I want to open that bottle of vodka? Do I need to go onto social media? Could I actually go out for a walk? Could I actually speak to somebody that I love? And you start making those choices. But in a world that is very fast-paced, and the internet is very fast-paced, serving us up dopamine hits very quickly, we need to slow down. Another way of doing it is to just go to a river and watch the water flow by. If you can watch the water flow by for half an hour, you will find this power when you can make choice. And that's when you ask yourself, what is really important to me in life? And if you want happiness, then you will look at things like love, meaning, purpose, and other people. Then you have to make choices that actually move you to that. So meditation, or a quiet time, gives you the space to observe what's going on in your mind and to take some control, so that your thoughts don't guide you, so that the social media doesn't guide you, but you actually make choices that you actually want. And that way, I believe you can move closer to long-term contentment. That's just something that I suggest and something for us all to consider, Hurricane.
Well, it's powerful stuff, and thank you, Doc. Now, I do have one interjection with that. Is just, wouldn't that take some willpower for someone to actually literally do that next? I mean, because you'll have to be aware, and you want to make that, again, choice to sit down and start reflecting. That's going to be the hard part. So,
okay. I'm not making fun of you, Hurricane, but I'm just sort of saying you're asking me just how much effort does it take to sit in a chair and do nothing? That's the effort that we're asking here. We're asking you to make the effort to sit in a chair and do nothing but observe your thoughts. And I agree with you, Hurricane. It actually does take a lot of effort, but we can have a little laugh at ourselves to say, I can't believe that something so simple takes effort. Okay. But it does. And we all know that. And this is where we help each other. Yeah. I find it hard too. And you know what, Hurricane? I tell myself to do this every day as well, because I go too quickly. So I could use more of a quiet time and this space to observe my thoughts and feelings.
Well, thank you, Doug. I purposely asked that because I know it is simple, yet it could be difficult, especially if you have the urge, right? So yeah. at the end of the day, as you said, it's just like sit down. I mean, really, you owe it to yourself. We owe it to ourselves to do this. And I love what you said. You do it yourself. I think we all have to do these practices on a regular daily basis. A lot of us, you know, at least in the world that I'm in and the talks that I have, many of the instructions or the guidance that I hear all the time is, get up in the morning, do certain things, affirm, go to the gym, have a little bit of a scheduled, you know, program that you have. And those are like non-negotiables that you have to have, including meditation. It comes in a discussion over and over, or some form of it, you know, and as you said, quiet time, whatever it is. But it is something that is being used by coaches, and whether fitness, live and health coaches, you know, and gurus and so on and so forth. So it is happening. It is definitely by experts such as yourself. So it is a practice that we should all adopt. And you know what? Make it a part of our lives, a routine. That's it.
Okay. So let me make it easier. Okay. Because this is the bottom line for the brain. If it brings you pleasure and goodness, you will do it. If it brings you pain, you won't do it. Okay. So even to sit in a chair, choose a time of day, let's say when you get home from work and you're a bit tired, have a chair that's just so comfortable you can't resist it. Give yourself a view that puts a smile on your face. Have a cup of tea or something like that that just makes you feel good inside. Put on a little bit of music or a bit of silence that makes you feel good, and your brain will associate sitting in a chair with pleasure. Okay. And then all of a sudden you will protect this and you go, no, I will do this, right? You'll close the door. You'll make sure that nobody disturbs you. And then when you actually feel the benefit of this space where you actually relax and you're actually enjoying what you're doing, you will do it more and more. And then your life starts to spiral up towards more usefulness, more meaning, more purpose. And dare I say it, Hurricane, more love for other people.
Well, Doctor, I'm just listening to you. I'm already feeling like I want to do that right after the show.
Well, I want to do it too. I better listen to me too. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not difficult. And I love what you said. You can sit. I mean, if you have TV, right? Talking about you have a phone, you can literally put a YouTube video where it's just sea and ocean and or a fall or something. We have those. I mean, my daughter sleeps with those things. Literally, she throws them on at night. You know, that's how she goes to sleep. You know, and I walk by her room. It's like he hears like, you know, there's a fall coming down or there's rain or there's some ocean stuff. But it just works for her. But I think we can all use that, and it's not difficult. It doesn't cost a lot or anything, actually. You know, as you said, this is a simple way to treat ourselves. You know. Both mentally and physically, because I think that will rest both, you know, our, you know, the full concept here. So thank you, Doug, for that.
Thank you, Hurricane, for the opportunity that you're giving us to go on the airwaves, because social media is not a problem. We can use it for good, which is what I believe that we're doing, Hurricane, or it can be used to manipulate people, and that's a pity. It's our choice.
Well, thank you. And by the way, you know, I thank you for doing this. I mean, this is valuable time. It is Saturday for you. So, you know, you're doing this on a weekend. And, you know, again, it is something that you're dedicated to. We've been doing this, I mean, 4 seasons now, and it's 4 years or only. I think it's 4 years. Yeah. So it's been quite a while, and we've covered a lot of grounds. And so I, again, it is a pleasure and honor to have met you, and that we're continuously doing this. And I know we've touched a lot of lives. I mean, you know, the downloads of the show can talk about themselves. I mean, the people are getting the value. But I do want to also touch about, you know, the other stuff that you're doing on the network, which is the resilient relationship talk show with your, you know, dear beloved wife, you know, Caroline, and you guys are terrific. And the latest episode was just the fun about, you know, conflict resolution. I mean, I do urge people to listen to it, you know, and I know that's once a month you go live on the radio. It's 9 p.m. same time, but, you know, different day of the month. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, that's just a lot of work that you do in to the world, you know, and really it's an investment that you're doing in helping people, you know, live a healthier life and better, you know, state. That's it.
Well, thank you for that, Hurricane. Thank you for all of that, because it gives our lives meaning, purpose, and even a bit more happiness, Hurricane.
That's all we want. And I hope that we touch lives slowly but surely. And this is evergreen. So people do check out, you know, the YouTube, you know, Dr. Haim's YouTube is going to play there as well. We have a playlist on our YouTube. We have everywhere that the network is. This program is available on the podcast, any platform around the world. You'll have this access to the radio. You can download and you can listen to the Resilient Talk Show, a relationship talk show, as well as the Climb to Your Prime with Dr. Haim. So we got you covered. There's plenty of more out there. So yes, please do so. Doctor, thank you so much for really being with us today. I know we had some difficulties, but I think overall it was all, you know, the messages were clear. We were able to actually convey the information. We only covered two questions literally from a whole list, but there were very powerful questions. I think there are questions of life, of today's moment. And so we'll catch up on the other ones the next month. So folks, stay tuned for the end of August for the next one. And there will be more. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Hurricane.